Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
12-9. You know, that's the final score of a pretty awesome baseball game or a really boring football game. In the case of this, for our purposes, it is the latter. Saints, Panthers, 12-9. But then again, let me say this. I'm not here to make the whole thing a big buzzkill. It was not that. It was not a total buzzkill like the Panthers. The Panthers did break this out early on.
Fakes to McCaffrey. No, gives it to McCaffrey, who's going to throw. Got a wide open man, Hurts. Down the numbers, near sideline. 20, 15, 10, 5, a touchdown.
Whoa. Not bad, right? Not bad at all. So they broke that out. So the whole thing was not a total buzzkill. They also scored with an interception return on a two-point conversion.
They're going to go for two and a quick shotgun snap on the two-point try. Breeze in the backfield. Now runs. He's on the number. Oh! Throws the pass. It's picked off. Picked off on the far side. Uh-oh. Grabbed by Dante Jackson. He runs from the 20. Oh, no. On the numbers, the 30. Here he goes. The 40 up the middle, the 50. Foot race to the 30. Foot race on the hash mark to the 20. The 10. He's in. Oh, my goodness. Carolina will get two the other way.
Best two-point conversion ever. Yeah, like I'm saying, that was not a total buzzkill. You got those two things, and that was about it. Well, actually, that was exactly it. Remember a few weeks back when the Panthers were lighting the league up with Norv Turner, dialing up one insane scheme after another? Man, that was a long time ago. You see, the NFL is like dog years. What happened 8 weeks ago may as well have been 8 years ago. Like, if I told you back then that the Panthers would score the trick play and a two-point conversion, you'd be pretty fired up. And then you'd ask, what else did they do? And I would say, nothing. They didn't do jack. They didn't do jack because Cam Newton's shoulder is jacked the hell up. And they were playing the Saints defense. Yeah, I said that. They were playing the Saints defense. Remember what I said about dog years. Remember when the Saints defense gave up more than 400 yards and four TDs to Ryan Fitzpatrick? Hell, do you remember Ryan Fitzpatrick? That actually went down this season. That was barely more than 3 months ago. And that felt like three decades ago. You see, my point is, this is exactly how fast this league changes. Because the defense that gave up more than 400 yards and four TD passes to some guy who went to a good academic school just shut the Panthers down to the tune of 247 yards and 13 first downs. Again, some of that definitely due to Cam's shoulder and the issue he's having. And the fact that the ball leaves his hand like a shot put now and can't go more than 10 yards in the air. But let's give the Saints defense a little credit too. Because the only points that the Panthers scored were on that trick play and an interception return on a two-point conversion. In other words, New Orleans was two fluke plays away from a shutout. So bad shoulder or not, they got after Cam. They hit him four times. They sacked him four times, actually, and they hit him another. And they talked about it, especially Cam Jordan. Cam Jordan v. Cam Newton is one of the better rivalries, one of the better beefs in the NFL. And after the Saints swept the Panthers last year, remember Jordan sent Newton a bottle of wine. Newton responded last night with a pair of cleats that had a bottle of wine and a busted broom. So Jordan let Newton hear him. Quote, I feel like he was talking and, or I was talking, and he just ignores me. Like, is he older? He might have an older brother syndrome. I felt like I was the older one, but like I said, he shrugged off my sack, so I'm going to continue to harass him. I'm going to continue to put pressure on him, end quote. And he did. And you know, he talked about it. The only question now is, now that he has effectively ended Carolina's season, is Jordan going to send Newton another bottle of wine? Not according to Jordan, he's not.
Are you going to be sending any more bottles of
wine? I'm going to drink my, you know, I'm going to keep it to myself for right now. You know, there's some long lines of, you know, not trying to make a bear mad, you know? Don't poke the bear.
Don't poke the bear, right? But then again, on second thought, Jordan said, quote, they brought a cup with them. I think something along the lines of they brought their own juice in a cup, a juice box. I don't know what it was, but I do know that he's got to go back to the refrigerator and pull out a bigger cup, end quote. And so there it is, the first ever incident of juice box smack. And it's good, because Jordan is right. he and his are sipping from a giant mug right about now. They're drinking from a Stanley Cup-sized glass, and everybody else is working juice boxes. You see, the thinking has been, when you look at the good teams right now in the league, there are two groups. The ones with the good offenses and the shaky defenses, like the Rams and the Chiefs. Or the ones with the good defenses and the shaky offense, like the Bears. But now you've got the Saints, and I'm going to argue they've got both. Yeah, I know the Saints' offense didn't really get on track last night. That'll happen, especially when the offensive line is as busted up as theirs is, and you're down to your last healthy lineman. But you can't tell me it's not a good offense. It's still a great offense, and it's not one-dimensional. You've got Drew Brees. You've got Michael Thomas. It's a lethal combo. You've got Alvin Kamara. And as much respect as Drew Brees gets, it's still not enough. I mean, this dude is still special and scary as hell to an opposing defense. And then you add Mark Ingram, and you've got Sean Payton running the show. And now they're one win away from the home field throughout the postseason. And good luck to anybody trying to beat them in their house. That's just not happening. They might not be the monster that we thought they were a few weeks back, but they're still the team to beat in the NFC, and especially if that thing runs through their dorm. Their dome, I should say. So, give them their credit. They're still a team to beat. 1-800-636-8686. And if I'm Carolina, I know they've got a 1%. Technically, they've got a 1% chance of still making the postseason. Great. And you've got a 100% chance of losing if, in fact, you get there, and you won't. If you keep running Cam Newton out there, shut this guy down. For who? For what? Shut this guy down. Why are they playing this guy? He's not right. Obviously, he's not right. And finally admitted as much after that game last night. Look ahead to the future. You're not going to the postseason. Not this year. Not with that guy. I wouldn't risk it. I would not risk it. Once again, for who? For what? Really quickly, I want to talk some Colts football. We are joined right now by a safety for the Colts. He had a big game that win over Dallas. Indianapolis is 8-6. I've got a few minutes with Clayton Gethers. Clayton, really nice to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Really good to visit with you. So we only have a couple of minutes, so let me get at this. You had another big game in that 23-0 win over Dallas. Any win is great in the NFL, but from a defensive standpoint, how much more special is it to get a shutout?
That was special. That was special. Huge confidence booster. That just says a lot about the coaches. Said a lot about the guys we have in the room, the character here, you know. So we just got to keep building off that.
You know, I'm curious. In terms of the character in the room, you guys started 1-5, and then you turned it around. As a captain, what was your message to your teammates during that rough start? And then how'd you go about leading them to make sure that that bad start did not turn into a bad season?
You know, everybody felt the same way, you know. That's not us. That's not. We worked too hard for this. So, you know, it was just all about, you know, just being accountable. You know, doing it for the man next to you, and then everybody bought in, and you know, we got this thing going. So we just got to keep it up.
You know, watching you guys play, there's like a nastiness, a physicality to the team on both sides of the ball. Your offensive line dominated a really good defensive front for the Cowboys, and then you completely shut down a physical Cowboys offense. So, how would you describe the attitude and kind of the swagger of that team right now?
Hey, smash mouth football. That's what it is on both sides of the football. That's how I describe it. You know, you want to be nasty on defense. You want to be nasty on offense as well, you know?
You know, at the top, I want to mention this, but you had a big career at UCF, and I want to ask you that. How much pride do you take in being a Knight and being one of those guys who helped put that program on that map?
Oh, I take a lot of pride. You know, we always say, you know, built by UCF. Maybe it's Knight for life. So I have a lot of pride. I like what's going on right now. And, you know, we just got to keep winning, keep doing it. And, you know, it makes me feel great. You know, I still wear my UCF stuff now. So it's going to be good.
Clayton Gethers joining us. I'd go back even further. You're from Georgetown County, South Carolina, and you played your high school ball at Carver's Bay. What was it like growing up there? And then what's it like when you go back home and all the kids look up to you now as a role model?
It's been great. Been great having the family there, you know, just learning a lot there, going through adversity and just, you know, going back home and seeing the kids, you know, seeing the smiles on their faces, you know, because, you know, they're looking up to me. So, you know, just to go back and it's someone from their hometown that they can relate to, you know, so that's the main thing. I love it. South Carolina football, winning football, you know, Darius from there. So, hey, We out here at the Colts now.
Yeah, you are for sure. And not only that, but your family. Your family is legendary in that you're the sixth member of your family to play in the NFL. Your uncles, Robert Sr. and Jumpy. Your cousins, Robert Jr., Clifton, and Kwame. What did you learn from your uncles and your cousins when it came to what it took to be great at football?
For one, it's a blessing. Don't take things for granted. You know, it's a blessing to be in the situation, a blessing to have, you know, my uncles go through the process. But, you know, their message is the same as it was when I first started playing to now, you know, just stay hungry and humble. And that's how I approach the game. And, you know, I take it every day like that. Stay hungry and stay humble.
Stay hungry and humble. It's a great message, and that's an amazing thing. Six family members in the NFL. Giants at the Colts on Sunday. It is a CBS game, and the Colts are 8-6. Clayton, I wish we had more time, but I'll take what I can get. Really nice to have you on, man. Thanks so much. Good luck.
Hey, appreciate it.
Appreciate it, too. Clayton Gethers joining us. Let's talk some Knicks basketball. Yesterday, ESPN's Ian O'Connor, excellent journo, dropped a massive feature on Knicks owner James Dolan. Pretty interesting read. In fact, very interesting. And if you're looking for an immediate hook, how about the very first sentence, which reveals that Dolan was dressed all in all black, ripping on a vape pen during the two-hour interview? Hell yes. James Dolan, vape guy. James Dolan, billionaire, owner of the Knicks, vape guy. And vape guy, as we all know, is all about the vape life. Vape guy is that delusional idiot that kicked smoking cigs only to switch up and put a battery-powered robot dart in their gap and can't wait to tell you how much healthier it is and what a great choice it was. Never mind that vape guy relentlessly hits his pen at a clip that would make Jim Leland look straight edge. You see, vape guy's got no idea what's in that thing. Vape guy's got no time to be bothered thinking that just maybe sucking on a battery 24/7 might lead to a health consequence down the road. Vape guy makes it act like he's eating a banana. Hey, man, antioxidants. Hey, vape guy, wake up. No, but vape guy doesn't want to hear it. Vape guy's like, hey, man, at least it's not a heater, right? Right? Yeah, right, vape guy. Keep telling yourself that. Whatever works for you, vape guy. But we didn't just learn that James Dolan is vape guy, and that in and of itself is a really good start. We also learned, of course, and something we already knew, he is guitar guy. Now, if you have followed this program at all in the past year, you know I've got an extensive history of running down James Dolan's traveling talent show band, JD and the Straight Shot. JD and the Straight Shot is what happens when a dude with no musical skill and a hell of a lot of money collide in a train wreck of shamelessness.
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain in Shambhala.
Wait for it. That's the out-of-key, granola-infused vocal chords of the Knicks owner murdering a cover song on The Tonight Show. And I'm not sure who's more guilty for that performance, James Dolan for doing it or Jimmy Fallon for allowing it. Tie for dead last. But apparently Dolan didn't always wait for TV producers to reluctantly accept his sacks of cash in exchange for a stage. Allegedly. Because according to Ian O'Connor, Dolan, quote, on occasion would play his guitar on the Knicks team plane, even after losses, according to several witnesses, end quote. One such witness told O'Connor, quote, it was the last thing that players and coaches wanted to hear. I just remember the looks on their faces, end quote. Man, no wonder the Knicks suck. Imagine going on the road, getting hammered on the floor, getting on a bird, and forgetting your noise-canceling headphones. Or even worse, having them and being told to leave them in their case. And then being subjected to James Dolan murdering music in the first degree. That's when you want to find out if those exit doors will actually suck you out into a jet engine confetti cannon. Everybody knew that dude in college who always had an axe within arm's reach and was way too willing to start strumming some ballad that nobody asked for, that nobody wanted. And the only thing more awkward than listening to unsolicited acoustic guitar is asking the bag to please stop playing. James Dolan was that bag. Well, allegedly. And to me, that's like the most alpha power move I've ever heard. I own the team. I scratch your checks. I own the plane. I own the guitar. Deal with it. Here I am. Here the bleep I am. And to you, I'm Eric Clapton. To you, I'm Jimi Hendrix. Here the bleep I am. Anybody have any bleeping requests? Here I am. Except Dolan. Dolan says it's not true. Dolan says it never happened. Dolan calls it, quote, someone's fantasy. Someone's fantasy. Yeah, that or somebody's nightmare. I can see why Dolan would deny it, because it takes a certain lack of self-awareness, unknown to pretty much anybody, to do that to an airplane full of innocent people, especially after a really bad day at work. Except Ian O'Connor has several witnesses who say that it really did happen. And I think that I'm going to go with a well-sourced journo over a vape-smoking billionaire whose relationship with reality is shaky at best. We all travel. Yeah, well, let me tell you something. Of all the egregious air travel faux pas, like taking your shoes off, ripping both armrests, smuggling a rodent on board, this is by far the worst. The article goes on to say that Dolan has not ruled out selling the Knicks if the price is right and the offer is competitive. Now, here's my question. We know that's not going to happen. You're not doing that. That's your identity. You're not going to get the $5 billion you want. So let's be real for a minute. You're not selling the team. Would you consider selling your guitar? How much? How much do you want for that? I'll double it. Keep the Knicks. Sell the axe. All will be forgiven. Seriously, though, you got to read this piece. There's so many gems. Like the fact that Dolan will play gigs in Europe because nobody knows him over there and he won't get booed. Which reminds me of the time that his band played the City Winery back in June of 2017.
Your singing voice leaves a lot to desire. You're a bad singer.
Don't quit your day job.
You're a bad singer.
This is terrible.
This is terrible.
I want my money back. Well, I want my money back. I made good money for the
I just want a refund. I just want a refund.
That's all I want.
I want a
Who are you? How do I get a job singing for a band? The voice is terrible.
Are you hearing this guy? Who are you? How did you get a job playing for a band? Your voice is terrible. I only want my money back. I just want my money back. I've never heard a guy so unhappy to be at a concert. In fact, I almost kind of respect Dolan. I almost respect him in the sense that the guy's like universally hated, but it hasn't stopped him from doing anything at all. He had Oak run from the garden. He almost took down a plane by playing his guitar. His ownership of the Knicks is regarded as like the worst in sports, and he just does not give a damn. He doesn't care. And then there's that vape pen in his mouth and a hard shell guitar case on the plane to prove it. You almost have to respect it. You almost have to respect that he does not care. Almost. Almost. He's vape guy. Greg Gard is my guest. Greg, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jim. How about you?
Really, really well. Thanks so much. Listen, you beat Savannah State Thursday in a game where Brad Davidson broke out of a bit of a scoring slump. He had 24 points. What did you make of the game that you got from him? And more importantly, what do you make of how he's dealt with the challenges so far this season?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you understand as an athlete that there's going to be ups and downs. And Brad, being as competitive as he is, he rarely experienced failure in terms of struggling through parts of a season, whether it's when he was a football player in high school, he was a really good one at that, and obviously as a basketball player. So it's a learning experience that he's gone through, and you know, most players go through, that you're going to hit some highs and you're going to enjoy those, and you're going to have to deal with some lows as well, and just stay the course, trust your preparation, trust how you operate every day, and eventually you're going to work your way out of it. Not get consumed emotionally with whether the ball goes in for you or not. Try to impact the bottom line of the success of your team in other ways, and he's been able to do that. And the offense usually finds that person when they don't really attach themselves emotionally to their jumper, so to speak. So he's done a good job of staying the course. Obviously made some shots. That helps. But I think our group is, you know, we're a work in progress. We're getting better. We've got to continue to get better. We're in the midst of finals right now, so they're consumed with that. But I like where we're at, because I see a lot of potential in terms of how we can grow from here.
We're talking to Greg Gard. I was going to ask you what you think about where you're at. For instance, you're 9-2, but you made the point that pretty much everybody in that locker room thinks that you should be 11-0. So one-third of the way through the season, how would you describe the identity and the mentality of this particular group?
Well, I think they've done a terrific job of taking the experiences we went through last year, and obviously we had to deal with a lot of adversity with youth and injuries and then not having the success we're accustomed to here. And using that as a catapult into the off season and also into the start of the season so far this year. This group has a maturity level about them. Obviously, they've benefited from the experiences that they went through before. But we're healthier. We're another year older in terms of our core group. And obviously, we got a terrific player in Ethan Happ leading the way for us. But we have a lot of other complementary players around him that have grown, that have stepped into new roles, that have matured. So, but I think we can get so much better on both ends of the floor, and we've been pretty good on both ends. But I think we're still, especially our younger guys, are learning how they can impact games. As I mentioned with Brad, you know, not when the ball doesn't go in, how can you still impact the game? And we have guys that are starting to see some of those things and are becoming more and more comfortable.
We're talking to Greg Gard. He is the head basketball coach at Wisconsin. You know, you mentioned the injuries. There were a lot of injuries. I get that's part of the game, but you had a lot of injuries. And as a result, you get a lot of young guys playing a lot of minutes. As a team, you are healthier right now, which is great. But how about that experience that the young guys got last year? How much has that paid off this year?
Well, it was big, because it obviously puts you in situations where they have to play a year ago, or maybe they're not ready for the volume of minutes they were going to get. And we had to go through some growing pains. It wasn't all positive experiences. So I think by taking that and getting a taste of that, that gave them a true life experience of what life was like here at this level as a college basketball player. And it helped them have a better mentality of how they have to prepare in the off season and an expedited maturity, so to speak. So, you know, they've taken advantage of it. They've kind of grabbed it and ran with it. You know, and I like I said before, like I like the direction and the maturity level, the mentality this group has, because they know there's a hunger, there's a chip on their shoulder, so to speak, that they've got a lot to prove. And so far, they've done a pretty good job of taking steps forward to be a good team.
We were talking Wisconsin basketball, Greg Gard, my guest. You mentioned Ethan Happ. Now, he was really good as a freshman, even better as a sophomore, and then again as a junior. But as a senior, he's averaging 19 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists, nearly 2 blocks per game. He's shooting 60% from the field. How much has his game improved in his time in Madison?
Well, it's come, you know, and he's improved a lot on the floor, Jim, but I think what I've been most impressed with, and as a coach, you always want to see players go through this and grow this way, or people grow this way, how he's matured and grown off the floor is probably as much, if not more, than what he's done on the floor. And obviously he's added layers to his game and improvement to his game every single year. But his maturity level, his leadership role has obviously grown, and he's accepted that now, and he's more comfortable with that. He's more engaged with his teammates. And obviously it helps when you have more maturity and experience around you. It takes some of the pressure off him of maybe it was placed on him every single possession a year ago. Now he's got people around him that can score, people around him that can help out in different ways. So it's taken, like I said, some of the weight off his shoulders. But I've just noticed his maturation as a person and as a leader and as a communicator over the course of even as a student. He's turned into a terrific student now that's in grad school working on his master's. So, like I said, he's taken the steps you'd want people to take. It's why you do this as a coach, to watch somebody evolve through their career and be a better person, a better student, obviously a better player, but he's really elevated all parts of his personality, parts of his academic world. Everything has grown along with him being a great player.
you know, it's really high praise. He's very unique. He's very different. And the fact is, he could have gone to the NBA after last season. So as a head coach, how did you approach your role in that decision-making process? How did you go about supporting him?
Be very open with communication. You know, I felt it was with the rules how they are now, where they can go and do, you can work out for teams and go through that process and submit your name early. As long as you don't hire an agent, you can come back. Really, I felt he should go do that. He contemplated doing it between his sophomore and junior year, but then decided to wait because you can only do it, you know, one time. So he decided to hold it and wait for that between that junior and senior year. And I felt I encouraged it. I thought it was good for him. I think it was win-win all the way around. We've had other players do it, and I think you know, well, players in the future take advantage of that as well. But I felt he really approached it the right way. That you go all in, you're going to try to make it, and you're going to try to, you know, find that one team that wants to draft you. And when it doesn't work that way, you take the feedback, you listen, you try to encompass some of those things that they're talking about to improve your game. But then bring all those experiences back to our locker room and share those with our younger guys and help make your experiences that you got with the eight teams you worked out with and all the training you went through, bring that back to our guys and share some of that. And that's been good for him in terms of giving him an area to lead in, an area to talk about, you know, future plans. But also it's been great for our team because you bring an experienced player back that has been very engaged with his younger teammates, which is the advancement we needed to see, and the same things that he needs to work on for that level or what's going to be next for his career are the same things that was going to make us or are going to make us the best team we could be. And he's in the process of constantly trying to improve. I mean, we've had all of our best players here. Obviously it's no secret, have spent a lot of time in the gym, a lot of time on their own. And he's right at the top of the list in terms of hours or number of times he punches the clock, so to speak, of working out on his own. He really commits to it, and it's shown in terms of the type of player he's become.
Wisconsin basketball coach Greg Gard, my guest. Before I let you go, you're 9-2, you're 2-0, you're 60 in the AP poll. You know, last month you faced a pair of ranked teams in Virginia and Iowa, and a total of 6 power conference teams as well. I mean, that's not exactly easing your way into the season. There are not too many other programs who have gone through that. So what did you guys show you in the way they handled that challenge?
Well, it tested us right off the bat, and I think it prepared us for what was going to come. You know, we had had others before that. We played at Xavier. We had Stanford and Oklahoma. You mentioned Virginia. We had those three in the Bahamas. So I think it forced us to figure some things out and mature faster than maybe normal, which you would go through a normal schedule as you kind of ease into it and hit some more BCS-level games or Power 5 games in mid or late December. We had to jump into it right away, second game of the year. So it forced us to, you know, have a mature approach about it. I think it's been great for us. I mean, maybe when I looked at it in October or September, maybe not how you would exactly draw it up, but I think it's really helped us in terms of getting out of the gate quick. It's forced some maturation, even more so than what had already occurred, and it's tested us, and they've taken it as a challenge. And we've played a lot of road games already, and we've got more coming yet here in the non-conference. So, you know, when we get back into the meat of the Big Ten season after the first of the year, and we work our way through that. By the time we hit, you know, February, March, we're going to be very well tested and really have, you know, have a lot of things in place in terms of experiences that we've had both here at home and on the road against really good teams. And I think that can only help you when you play really good competition.
He was the 2016 National Coach of the Year. Next up for Wisconsin, Grambling, coming up on Saturday, noon Eastern. Greg Gard is the head coach there. Greg, appreciate it very much. Really nice to have you back on the show. Thanks for doing that.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Dr. Robert C. Robbins. Dr. Robbins, it is very nice to meet you. What's up, Doc? How are you?
Jim, long time, first time. I've never called Eddie H., but I've been listening to you since you've been on the air. I remember when Jake was born, and I just driving up from Tucson to Phoenix today, turned your show on like usual, and I hear this story, and I said, well, I need to talk to Jim because we want Jake to be a Wildcat for life. We want him to come to Tucson. And now that I've listened to you talk about what he's interested in, you know that our journalism program in the business, you can check me out, Adam and Alvin, all the boys can check me out. It's known as the New York Times of the West. We've got Pulitzer Prize winners on our faculty. The Daily Wildcat is the student-run newspaper. We are all about student focus. And let me tell you, Jake may want to go out of state, Madison is a great place. Missouri is a great journalism school. But he can drive over from L.A. to Tucson. He's going to have a lot of Californians. It is a beautiful place. And, by the way, it'd be good for you and Janet to visit because we've got great sports. So we're all about our students and helping our students prepare for the fourth industrial revolution, which is a convergence of digital, biological, and physical sciences. And we're going to be the leading university that are going to prepare our students to be disruptive innovators. We would love to have Jake be a Wildcat.
Boy, I'll tell you what, Doc, that is something else. That is some kind of pitch, and I would expect no less from somebody with your background and in your position. That really is amazing. You know, as parents, and you understand this, you're looking for the best educational opportunity, but you want a good college experience. You know, I've said to Jake, and Jake got it in his head, I want to go to NYU. I want to go to a city. I said, son, slow down. You've got your entire life to live in a city. You have your entire life to work in a city. You need a good college experience. So before I let you go, Doc, what is it about Tucson? What about Arizona? Why is that the college experience where we want to send our kid?
Well, I think just what I said, he's interested in journalism. We have got, as I said, the New York Times of the West Journalism Department. And other places are good, obviously NYU, Northwestern, Missouri, Wisconsin. But this is going to be familiar to him. It is a big-time research-intensive university. We're one of only 60 AAU universities. We're one of the top 30 research universities. He's going to be able to get incredible support from the faculty, and he's going to be on a campus of 45,000 students and get to experience all of the sports and all the activities of a big-time Division I sports program. So I would love to talk to Jake directly and meet him. I'll be in L.A. for the Rams 49ers game on the 30th. Any chance? You got my cell number? Give it to Jake. I'd love to meet him and give you my pitch in person.
Dr. Robert C. Robbins, the president of the University of Arizona. Doc, honestly, number one, thank you very much for being a listener to the program. I cannot believe that you remember when Jake was born, and I had to run out of the studio. Janet had the C-section, so it's amazing that the time flies like that. We appreciate this greatly. Believe me, I will run this back to the family. We will meet as a family. We will talk about this. We would love to see you in Southern California when you come, and the fact that you made that call and talked to us directly means the world to me and the family, Doc, sincerely.
I mean, this is very sincere, Jim.
No, I
know. I know you got a big audience, but we'd love for Jake, you and Janet and the family to come and visit campus and let him decide for himself, because at the end of the day, of course, that's what's most important. He makes his own decision.
You betcha. No, it absolutely. It's his decision. It is his decision, but this is exactly what we need, all this information. It feels great to be wanted. Doc, thank
absolutely.
You very much. I really
thank
appreciate you,
Jim. I really appreciate you making the time for me on short notice.
Oh, such a thrill. Let's go to Jeff in Southfield quickly. Jeff, what's going on?
Thanks for the vine, Jim. Hey, Matt in L.A., here's how I picture you. You live in that apartment building in Reseda where the Karate Kid lived with his mom. And in fact, you took over the job of maintenance man for Mr. Miyagi. But instead of growing bonsai trees and teaching kids important life lessons like how to believe in yourself and how to defend yourself, you grow weed and teach kids important life lessons like those creepy older dudes who are willing to sell kids weed. Speaking of weed, I want to congratulate my home state of Michigan for voting to legalize recreational marijuana in the recent November elections. Even though pre-election voter polls showed a 70% approval rating, I expected the proposal to fail. It was my belief that the number of stoners who would be able to set the bong down long enough to go vote would be, well, none. Not to mention the stoners who would forget what day the election was or what day it is at all. It was my belief that the only way that law would pass would be if they first passed a law allowing stoners to vote from their couch. But my bad, Jim, I forgot to consider basic stoner irony, which is that their lazy asses become the world's most determined go-getters when what they need to go get is weed. Well done, stoners. Speaking of stoners, former Lion Calvin Johnson was in the news again. It seems Calvin applied for a marijuana dispensary license from the state of Michigan, but he was denied due to unpaid parking tickets. It's not so much that he dropped the ball, Jim. It's more that he failed to complete the process of catching it. Yeah. Hey, Calvin. If I'm going to go into a weed dispensary owned by a former Lion receiver, I'm walking right past yours and going into the one owned by Charles Rogers. Yeah, you can get me that nice guy weed, Calvin, but Charles can get me that strong ass. Take the train right off the tracks and wreck your whole damn life, weed. Speaking of partying, Huge props to all the spirited clones who will be attending the mini clone stock hosted by Rick in Buffalo tonight. If you are uncertain how to locate Rick's tailgate, use your ears as a guide. While all the other tailgaters will be partying to hard rock like Metallica, Black Sabbath, and Motorhead, yours will be partying to the soft rock stylings of Clay Aiken, Laura Branigan, Air Supply, and the Goo Goo Dolls. Rick, if you think you can be president of the global Goo Goo Doll fan club and then give someone crap about liking the Spin Doctors, then you've lost all touch with reality. Besides, we all know you were at that free Spin Doctors concert last summer and that all 12 people in attendance were named Lawrence. You soft ass D-bags! I'm just kidding, Rick, but I'm not kidding when I say to all of the clones who will be in attendance this evening, everybody, have fun tonight. Everybody, Wang Chung tonight. That's a wrap, Jim. War Stucknut, War Romageddon, War Woodscopes, and War everyone and their families having a healthy, happy holiday.
War you, brother. What's up, Matt? Fan smack.
From Costa Mesa to Costa Rica, you're welcome. The matinee montage is blazing the CBS Sportsnet TV like the greenery in the fields of the Ricky Williams and Matt in L.A. compound. Jeffy in Southfield. Hey, homie, don't play hate the player, hate the game, because your game is expired like a TurboGrafx-16, you antiquated ass-kisser. Jimmy, I did some... Come to find out he fancies himself a YouTube comic, which the world knows to be as a never-will-be joke-killing jackass. When you can make Mark and Hollywood's thespian skills appear to be Tom Hanks or Denzel Washington-esque, you truly are the Cato Kalin of the jungle, you shark-jumping puke. Keep my name out of your polluted pie hole, you putrid side-part-rocking pipsqueak. That's all I got, Jim. War irate Craig taking a Salvation Army lady hostage for her piggy bank. Unwar Uncle Jeffy in Lousefield. Outro.
Outro. You can rack him. Kyle in Green Bay either is there already or he's en route. Let's find out. Kyle, what's going on, brother?
Rome, I am under 2 hours away from the great city of Buffalo. Rick is picking me up later tonight. We're going to crash some beers. And rumor has he's going to throw me through a table. Buffalo style, so I'm real excited for that. Check your Twitter feed, clones. Tomorrow I'm hitting Toronto. If anyone wants the Raptors game, I'm going to just spend the day there at Niagara Falls. But other than that, everyone, I just want to wish you guys a Merry Christmas. Hope you enjoy the Christmas card I sent you. And War Eli Manning getting the dub in the house that Peyton built on Sunday, baby. I'm out.
Kyle, nice job. Be sure you hit us up tonight. Make sure you're tweeting from the event. My man's coast to coast. Nobody is repping this show harder. Nicole Auerbach is my guest. Nicole, nice to have you back. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So last week you had a piece for The Athletic about the possible expansion of the college football playoff, and there is a new update today, but let me start with last week's piece first. When did you first start hearing rumblings that important figures in college football were interested in talking about expanding the playoff?
Yeah, well, you know, it came a little bit as a surprise to me. I had done a story during the midseason of college football season, and I talked to all five Power Five commissioners about scheduling and strength of schedule. So it was mostly about the 8 versus 9 conference game debate. You know, the three leagues that have missed the playoffs multiple times have 9-game conference schedules, and the two, the ACC and the SEC, play 8. So, you know, I had been talking to people and was told, you know, that was kind of like a, you know, a point of contention and a focal point for a lot of people within the sport. And then, so, you know, I just kind of kept my ear to the ground after that. And, you know, it came into play, you know, it almost came really into play, you know, with Georgia getting consideration for that fourth spot, would have left out 3 power conferences, the 3 that, you know, have been frustrated and have missed the field multiple times. So I really thought that it was going to have to take kind of like an Armageddon situation with Alabama, Georgia, and Notre Dame all making the field for this kind of the ball to get rolling. But, you know, I come to find out, I make some calls after the final selection Sunday, and, you know, you see the field and you see the New York Six Bowls, that people were already having these conversations and were frustrated, and that they felt, you know, 5 years of seeing the 4 teams selected into the field and the full 25 rankings, that they learned enough to, you know, notice some troubling trends. And kind of it went from there, that there were, you know, a number of influential people, primarily in the Big 10 and the Big 12, who are frustrated with this system and kind of ready to start, you know, getting a public debate going about kind of informal conversations that they've already been having, trying to push, you know, to get to the point where they can have formal conversations and even start looking at potential, you know, formats for expansion. So, you know, the ball is rolling, but it did start rolling a little bit earlier than I was anticipating.
You know, one of the arguments has been that a team like UCF has gone undefeated for 2 years in a row and never even gotten close to being considered for the playoff. How much of this expansion, this would-be expansion, be about UCF? And then maybe how much of this is about the Big Ten missing out two straight years?
I mean, a lot is about the Big Ten. And it's not even just that it's been out of it for 2 years. It's that its conference champion hasn't gotten in the last three, because the Big Ten really did think it had a shot to get two in a couple years ago when Ohio State got in and Penn State, the champion, did not. That even rubbed the wrong way, because, you know, that this was an important, you know, factor in the compromises that created the 14 playoff. And Jim Delaney was one of the commissioners that really wanted a conference champion to mean something and reflect a certain value that would ensure, you know, access points to this field. So that's been a big part of it, is the lack of consistency or value for conference champions for these power conferences, as well as the strength of schedule that I mentioned. And then, you know, what I think UCF comes into play here, because I know that people don't think that people like Barry Alvarez going to bat for UCF is all that genuine. I think it is, because it's changed the way that people view the formats that they would want to expand to. You know, I think there's a reason that Barry Alvarez is telling me that he supports an 18 format that has an at-large or a designated spot for a Group of Five champion. And the same conversation I had with Bubba Cunningham, UNC's athletic director, yesterday was, you know, he was talking about his background. You know, he has been an athletic director in conferences like UCF is in right now that have trouble accessing, you know, the actual playoffs, like, you know, the big, you know, the on-field way to determine a national champion. And so I think that is genuine. I think there's genuine support. I think that what people have seen UCF do for the last 2 years convinced them, reminded them of Boise State, but also convinced them that maybe when you're looking at expansion ideas, you should look at one that involves an at-large or a designated spot for a Group of Five champion, because a team like UCF, even if they're going to be the eighth seed every year, you know, you're giving them a point, an access point to the playoff, to determining a national championship. And so I think that people have seen what they've done and that they've still been so far removed from having that access. So I think it's changed the way that people view these 18 models that people are starting to talk about.
Nicole Auerbach joining us. She's a senior writer for The Athletic and a studio analyst for the Big Ten Network. So, Nicole, what about the SEC? The college football playoff has worked out pretty well for the SEC. What is your sense as to how that conference feels about expanding?
Yeah, this SEC doesn't have the same appetite that the other conferences do, and, you know, it makes total sense. They've had no problem getting a team in every year. They're the first league that got two in the same season. This year, Georgia, a non-champion, you know, was right on the doorstep of getting into the field again. So they have not struggled with it. And I think that you're going to see a lot of talk about, you know, their conference championship game. It is at a different echelon than all the other power conferences. It's so valuable to them. One of the best games of the year, the attendance, the fan interest, everything is there. So they don't like models that would possibly get rid of conference champions. I think, you know, I've talked to a number of athletic directors who feel very strongly about that point. But basically the SEC approach is, you know, it's not broke. We don't need to fix it. And it's not broken for them. You know, if they were left out 1 year that they thought they had a shot and they should be in it, maybe they would change their tune. But basically it's the other leagues that, you know, are having trouble getting that access and respect on an annual basis that are the ones pushing for this. And it makes total sense. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the SEC, you know, Greg Sankey, their commissioner, athletic directors over these next few weeks and months kind of, you know, defend the, you know, why they believe in the status quo, why they like four, and then also push back against some of these models that would affect conference championship games. And there's other ways to do it where you include conference championship games before a round of quarterfinals or something like that. And then there's conversations to be had about player safety and all this. We're so far from that at this point that I think, you know, they're going to have colleagues in other conferences trying to convince them, hey, let's at least have conversations, look at models that could possibly work, and basically just sit down at the table. So it's going to be interesting to see how the SEC responds to that from a lot of their, you know, their colleagues across the country.
All right, so one more thought. In terms of the models that are being discussed, the one that comes up the most often seems to be an eight-team model. If there's eight teams, what would that field look like, and where would those games be played?
So there are so many different ways you can do this, but I'll kind of focus on the one that Chuck Nines, the former Big 12 commissioner, likes, Barry Alvarez likes it as well, and then Bubba Cunningham, UNC's athletic director as well. You know, it's an eight-team model that has five spots, so each of the Power Five conference champions has a designated spot. They like a group of five champion spot, and then two at-larges. And then you see Brian Kelly, Notre Dame's coach, he said he likes, you know, the five Power Five spots and three at-large spots. Whatever, you know, they're kind of variations of the same deal here, which is that, you know, you're rewarding champions, which was, again, very important to these commissioners when they created this thing. But you're also allowing for the best of the rest to make the field. So, you know, there's response to, you know, the SEC defending the status quo by saying, hey, the SEC is probably going to get two teams in most years, maybe three, if you have two at-large spots, or at least two at-large spots. So there could be some support for that. Again, it's going to come down to, really, I think, the SEC conference championship game and things of that nature, you know, when you get to the point of potentially having to compromise and give up valuable things. You know, that's a really valuable thing to the SEC. But I think there's ways to do it. You can do quarterfinals on campus, which I think would be awesome and well-attended, and really create for an insane day of college football that I think would be similar to the first couple days of March Madness if you had, you know, all of these quarterfinals on the same day or three on the same day, one the night before, however you wanted to do it. I think that would be pretty cool. So, you know, that's a model that people are talking about. One thing I will just say is, even if it's not that specific model for an 18 playoff, a lot of people who thought that maybe six would be a compromise are really now in that eight-team format camp. I think that they're seeing that that's a better way to get more parties served. So you're definitely seeing more chatter about eight versus six and about, like, other types of formats you could do that would maybe be, you know, easier to swallow. I think everyone's kind of, you know, abandoning six and saying, you know, eight can serve more parties, and so we're looking at that more seriously now.
Got it. One last thought. I'd really want your opinion on this, if you don't mind. On a completely different note, as somebody who reported extensively on DJ Durkin and Maryland football, what was your reaction to the report that he was spending time with the Alabama staff?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I sent it to a couple of parents of current Maryland players who responded with some language that I'm not going to repeat, because it really surprised me, because I understand that Nick Saban, you know, has brought a lot of coaches that kind of needed to reboot or, you know, kind of, you know, get rid of their past and start over under his watch. But this just doesn't seem to be that it's needed or necessary, or that it would serve any function for Nick Saban as well. And it's one thing to bring someone like Lane Kiffin, who's, you know, maybe a little immature and, you know, has had, you know, kind of some missteps in the public eye and mostly, you know, lost jobs because they weren't winning enough, and rehabbing his type of image versus someone who, you know, oversaw a program of emotional and physical abuse and a player died during his tenure. I think that's a totally different scenario. And, you know, you don't have to rehab that person's career, and you certainly don't have to do it now.
All of that, and I don't know what Nick Saban gets out of that. That made no sense to me whatsoever. A senior writer for The Athletic, a studio analyst for the Big Ten Network, Nicole Auerbach, my guest. Nicole, great to have you back. Appreciate you. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for having me.
Well done. All right, so there's a big, big thing going on in Buffalo tonight. The Buffalo Clone Stock. The host of the Buffalo Clone Stock is the man who runs that shiny and up-and-coming town that is Buffalo. Rick in Buffalo. Rick, what's up, man? How are you?
Super pumped for tonight's Clone Stock, Jim. We got perfect Buffalo tailgating weather, scattered flurries, and a 15-degree wind chill. I even reached out to Leffen Laguna, told him to send his production crew so they can finally shoot a video worth watching. Last chance, Mike in Buffalo. It's in your best interest to show up tonight. Let me help you out. Hey, wife, I'm done pretending I like your family. I'm going out with the boys. See you tomorrow. We'll be in touch throughout the night, Jim. 5 o'clock, it's 716 Buffalo. Don't let me down. Thanks for everything, Jim. I'm out.
Rack him. Hey, Rick, thank you for everything. Rick in Buffalo repping this show hard, making this show better, elevating the conversation. Let's go to Fall City. Liz, Lady Clone. Hey, Liz, how are you?
Hey, Jim. I want to throw some shade at this clown calling himself Jeff in Southfield. He's no more Jeff in Southfield than that fat-ass hick Girth Brooks was Chris Gaines back in the day. I think it's likely Vic doing one of his cute little impersonations because no one in real life sounds like a mix between Cartman from South Park and a falsetto Muhammad Ali. At first, we thought it was Mike and Indy, but Mike is too proud to let a burner caller take credit for being racked with great calls. Mike likes everyone knowing he's Mike. But Vic, it all fits. He knows us too well. He had a previous beef with Rick, and he's been showing up in the Woodscopes lately. So, Victor, show yourself. I'm on to you. And, Tyler, I'm going to do my wars just how you probably like your wrestling sessions with your lady, short and unmemorable. War Stucknut and War Woodscopes. Hey, Jim, Merry Christmas to you, your family, and everyone in the jungle. 2018 was epic. I know 2019 will be off the hook, too. I'm out.
Nice job, Liz. You can rack her. Josh in the D. Hey, Josh.
Hey, what's going on, Romy? Happy holidays to you and yours. Of course I'll make the year of review. I'm the most polarizing figure in the jungle, Rome. You know, Jingle Bell Rocks is my favorite song. Let me give you a little jingle so you guys can remember how great I am since I've been calling since 2017 and 18. Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock. I wish that we could knock Rick and Buffalo out. Dancing and prancing, Jingle Bell Square. It's another Matt in L.A. calling. What do you think, Jim? You like that? Should I be a parent?
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
What do I think? Bro, I already thought that you're the worst caller I've ever had. And that is so much worse than anything you've ever done.
Good night,